And now, I've been listening to this young man for a lot of years. He's got his kind of his own take on the adventure forward into the free side of life. He has studied religion. His dad was a cop in Chicago. I don't know how that fits in. Wasn't he a cop in Chicago?
He was in San Diego. San Diego.
He was a cop in San Diego? Oh, my.
How'd you come up with that one?
I wonder if he's the cop that arrested me that time. I've known this young man for a long time, and I've watched him through struggles, and I've watched him through successes, and I've watched him through heartbreaks, and I've watched him through all sorts of joy, and he holds on to God's finger in his way, and I think we'll enjoy hearing it. What do you think? This is our Dan Hare.
I love you.
Love you, honey.
I feel really modern because I have my notes on my iPad. And I used to write them down, and then you kind of, you know, I'm getting a little bit hard of seeing and everything. So let me just do this little modern password. And then here
He's
we go.
Showing off now.
I'm showing off. I'm just showing off. Come on. You're supposed to, like, okay, here we go. Cool. So it's been a long time since I've talked here. Actually, a good amount of time. And Millie asked me, I think it was early January, for this date. And I said, okay, sure. And, you know, the message is always going to come, right? And so I'm thinking, well, I thought about this, that, and the other topic. And then I got a little bit, like, not panic, because it was a few weeks out. I'm thinking, I should have kind of an idea by now, and it's not totally gelling for me. And so online on Facebook, and I'll not mention his name because it might incriminate him, but I said, you know, any ideas what I should talk on? And he said, wine and women and song. And I thought, okay, that's, you know, kind of an open-minded church. We can talk about that. I'm kind of laughing, and I knew it was a joke. And so I thought to myself, wine, women, and song. And so the reason I have a bottle of wine is because I needed an outline for tonight. And so this bottle is from Robert Renzoni. He's up in Temecula. I know him. It was a gift to me. And I actually walked in. I want you to know that if those of you saw me, I went and sat, and then I walked into the kitchen. This is water. Okay, water. Okay, good. It's water. It's a nice bottle of Moscato, a little bit, I think it's red, as I recall. And so it's wine. So I covered that one. Check. Okay. Now, women, that's a hot potato. I'm not sure that I really want to go there, but then I thought to myself, right after Christmas, there was the auto show downtown, and a buddy of mine says, come on, let's go. So I go. And I got a Ford Fusion a couple of years ago, and so I go to the Ford booth, and, you know, the little gals behind the booth, they're the spokespeople, chatting away, and I overhear her say, you know, God's got good plans for you, plans for good. Not for evil, good plans. And I said, hey, that's in Jeremiah, isn't it? She literally went, whoa, looked at me. So we had this really pleasant conversation, and she's from Michigan. And so she's talking about real estate and how incredibly cheap the prices are, like condos for, you know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, and you can cash flow them. And I said, she says, yeah, I could flip this thing in 6 months and probably make, you know, X amount. And I go, dang, you're like a Proverbs 31 woman. And I don't know if many of you know Proverbs 31, it's kind of the profile of this godly woman who's both, you know, holds the hearth of the home, but then she's kind of a wheeler dealer, and she's just like moms, holds stuff together. And I thought, wow, really kind of nice. And I hadn't even thought of Proverbs 31 in ages. And so we had a really, really nice conversation. And so that's my woman story. Okay, check. And then I was listening to some music, and a song came up on YouTube. I was looking up Amy Grant. How many people remember Amy Grant? A long time ago? And it was Angels Watching Over Me Every Step I Take. And I thought, wow, I this is cool. And so I listened to that four or five times, and it's in my, you know, it's in my head. And I thought, well, that's going to be really a short talk. Yeah. And so at that point, I started to think, okay, somehow Hebrews 12 came to me. And it's that verse that says, that's not coming on. It says, therefore, with a whole cloud of witnesses surrounding you, press on in the journey that's before you. We all have our own journey. And let go of that thing. It's a sin, but it's really that thing that so easily entangles you from living the fullness of life that God gave to you and put before you. I thought, I like that one. I'm liking that one. You know, we believe in angels and we believe in intervention and messages. I said, oh, you know, they're going to like that one. And a cloud of witnesses. We've got a whole heavenly host from God to Jesus all the way down to angels, archangels, the whole plethora to our families that have gone on before us. And they're cheering us on. And that's kind of a lot of what the church is about. You get that little hello. It's like, I'm still here. Hang in there. Do this. You know, don't be afraid. And how many times do we find in our walk with God, in our spiritual path, that we get kind of sidetracked because of things like fear? Fear. And I thought, okay, this is good. And then I picked up a book. I hadn't read it for 30 years. I actually ordered it again. I recommend it, actually. It was a Chinese saint in the early 1900s. His name is Watchman Nee. Anybody remember him? Do you? And I thought, I read that a long time ago, and he was just a marvelous writer. So I pick up this little book, and it's called Sit, Walk, Stand. And I thought, you know, this is really an interesting book because it's kind of the three points or three tips on how to be successful in your spiritual journey, how to order your thoughts in your life, and how to stand firm. And so I thought, okay, this is going to be cool. In Bible school, you know, you tell them what you're going to tell them, you tell them, and then you tell them what you told them. That's what they said, that's how you preach. You tell them what you're going to tell them, and then you tell them what you told them. But as we got closer, I'm thinking, there's something that's feeling a little hollow. And this afternoon, I was spending some time with a buddy, and we were just sharing some stories and what have you, and this thing about my journey. And it's really easy to come up here and to kind of hide behind the Bible. This verse says, you know, and quote that verse, that's in Romans, and this one's in Ephesians, and, you know, you can do that. It's easy to do that. And the Lord kind of said, well, what about your journey, Dan? Let's get real. I thought, oh, shucks. That means I have to, like, be vulnerable and, like, you know, say stuff that, you know, it's kind of vulnerable being up here. But I know that at least one of you, I know all of you perfect, but one of you might have this same thing, is that we all have this journey in life, and it's unique to us. God has a pathway for every one of you that's so unique and different, and he's got a goal for you. Is it at the end of the day that you would shine his character and his love to the world? It's real simple. It's so simple that a child can understand it. And I kind of find it interesting over the years. You know, in the early days, I was kind of a more in the evangelical tradition, and man, they would argue over about everything. This doesn't mean this, and pre-trib, post-trib, covenantal theology, all this technical stuff, and it's really as simple as a child could understand about loving God. And so I started to think. A couple of days ago, or actually last week, 2 weeks ago, I cleaned out my middle garage, and there's a whole box of literary works. I wrote a screenplay in the 1980s, and I thought, gosh, that's a chapter I haven't visited for a very, very long time. And I wrote this screenplay called Press Time, and I had in mind that Amy Grant was going to star in it. And so I write it, and I don't know anything about the industry, but that never stopped me to do things in life. And I remember I wrote this screenplay, and I said, well, some people said you got to get an agent, and then you got to rewrite it. And I said, what do you mean? It's written. This is what it is. And so I printed up a business card that said Sunset Productions was the street I lived on. And I got a book that had a bunch of distributors and producers, and I sent out 12 of them. And three of them came back and said, we can't even open it. You don't have representation. I said, oh, okay. Then three of them didn't get answered, but I got answers from three production companies. And they said, we really like it, but our docket is filled for the next 2 years. And so, you know, if you've got something else down the road, you know, keep us in your loop. And I got a call from a guy from Paramount. And I remember I was up, and it was back in the days when you had the pagers. This is how long ago it was. And the phones where you put the quarters in. The pay phones. God, when was that? That was a long time ago. And I was up in L.A., and I don't know, it was on some deal, and I thought, Paramount. The message was on my recorder, and I thought, oh, cool, I've hit the home run. And I called the guy, and he was the nicest guy. And he says, man, I just wanted you to know that, you know, you're on the right track, and I, you know, keep at it. And I said, so you're not going to make me a deal? And he says, Dan, and he said, you know, we're a studio that if you had a star assigned to it, attached to the project, you know, we could talk. I said, oh, shucks. But it was encouraging that you got a call back because I didn't know anything, you guys. I just rolled the dice out there, and there I was. So I sat on it for a while, and I thought, you know, I'm going to call Amy Grant's agent. And I did, and I had a nice conversation. They gave me like 10, 15 minutes, and they said, well, send it to us. And I know it never got to Amy, but they basically said, you know, she's not interested in doing any movies right now. Because she was big in her pop career then. And so as the story goes, a friend of mine, Rick Elias, went to high school with him, and he was in a band that was really big in the Christian world. It was Rich Mullins. Anybody remember? Rich Mullins, right? And Rich passed some time ago. And Ricky was in that band. And he was, you know, we reconnected on Facebook, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. And it's been really fun because we're old now. You know, in high school, you got a lot of ego and, you know, little stuff. And it's like, we're all old, and it's just good to hear from you. And we really rebonded very nicely. And he was talking about he lives in Nashville now, and there's open mics. And Vince Gill, who's Amy Grant's husband, plays, you know, they're really down-home people. And I said, you know, that's funny. I wrote this screenplay and had them in mind, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't know where it was. It was in the deep throes of my dirty garage. And I says, yeah, if I ever got it, could you get it to her? And I'm not pitching it. It's just, you know, 25, 30 years ago I wrote this for her. So, yeah, I think I could. And so when I found it, I wrote him and I said, hey, I found the screenplay. He says, do you still have contact with Vince? And he says, nah, but I know somebody that knows them really well. And so one of my goals in the next week is to pull this thing out, dust it off, make some copies, and send it. And what I hope to get out of it is a picture that says, hey, nice read, Dan, you know, with an Amy Grant deal. And then I'll frame it and I'll have my chest out like, oh, isn't that the coolest thing? But it kind of goes to this point of your journey. And I had this little window frame when this whole idea of making a movie was really appealing to me. And as it all kind of unfolded, I had another experience where when I was writing it, and I had an award-winning screenwriter basically put it in screenwriting format, and she was out in Rancho Santa Fe, and she said, well, these women want a movie to be made on Father Joe Carroll. I said, oh, okay, cool. And they want you to produce it. I said, really? Okay. I'm in my 30s, and I didn't know what I said, okay, fine. And we met, and I met with Father Joe, and I ended up getting the option to Father Joe Carroll's story for a year. And I brought in a gal that was supposedly going to help me produce it, but it's all sharks. You guys, that industry is just filled with sharks, crooks and sharks. But in kind of the development of it, we ended up having a screenplay written. I wanted to talk to Joan Kroc because she was a big deal with a big supporter of Father Joe's. And I remember one day the phone rang and she said, Dan Hare? I said, yeah. Joan Kroc, what are you doing with Father Joe? It was like very accusing. I said, hey, we're big admirers. We want to do a movie on him. And she realized that I wasn't like, you know, trying to do something that was negative about him. And I said, I just wanted to see if you might share some experiences that you had with him. And she says, well, you know, we went to some humanitarian awards thing in London, and we got off my jet, and there are two Rolls Royces there. And, you know, Father Joe and I think he had one or two that were with him. And then she had a couple of people in her little entourage. And she said it was really fun because we're out on the tarmac, and she said she rolled down her window to her Rolls, and Father Joe did the same, like these two cars. And she says, might you have some Grey Poupon? Do you remember that commercial? Way, way back. God, this is great. She shared some other stories, and she says, well, have you ever done a movie? I said, no. I said, I'm interested in this business. And she goes, hmm. She says, no, I know Jack Lemmon. She says, you know what? I got to go. I got to sell the Padres. Never heard from her again. But here's the point. I was on this journey in this pathway, and I thought it would be the coolest thing to be a movie producer and a director. How cool would that be? You know, wear the black hat, and you're cool, right? You're in that creative kind of deal. But here's the long and short. I was probably 2 minutes away from being introduced to Jack Lemmon in the Hollywood world. I mean, he was connected up there. But the reality is, God saw that that was not in my best interest. The potential to get in that world would not have been good for me. All the temptation that goes on up there, and it's a world that is just a swindler's world. God intervened. But I did this whole movie chapter, and I attempted, I knocked on doors, I went for it. And as part of that journey, it was kind of a building step and a building block for me to just kind of keep on going, to keep on going. I never made a feature film. It never happened. I had some fun. I learned some things. I ended up starting a nonprofit called the Independent Film Society, where we'd bring independent filmmakers down and provide them a venue and promote a show and get them on the morning TV thing and the whole gig. And I learned a lot from them. But then I got burnt out. I did a documentary on the war in Iraq, which was very difficult, very complicated. And I have no more desire to do a feature film. Will it come back? Maybe it will, but it's not there anymore. But the point is that you go down, you go on your journey, and you get to a point and you go, why are doors not opening to me? Why is it that this pathway that I'm passionate about, why isn't it happening? And it's either because you're not ready for it, And I wasn't ready for it. I mean, the wine, the women, and the song, they weren't Proverbs 31 women, and they were not exactly Christian music, per se. You know what I'm saying. And so, as I thought about that, I thought, you know, that was God intervening to save me, not to punish me. God has good plans. And my idea was money and fame and all the things in the external world, as opposed to those things in the internal world that would emanate the supernatural love and grace and confidence of having a relationship with the living God. And so, this is when I get my drink. Now, this is water. I just want to reemphasize. Julio? There we go. Okay. Thank you. So I want to give you three tips on this whole thing about a walk with God. And it's kind of the outline of Watchman Nee in his book. I recommend it. It's $6-7 on Amazon. And he goes through the book of Ephesians, which, as you know, is one of my favorite books in in the entire Bible. And he says that as believers, we need to realize first and foremost our position in Christ. What is our position? And he basically says that God has seated you at his right hand. He's taken you into the heavenly places, into his family. And it's kind of the picture of the king with all the king's courts, and you're the king's family. You're the firstborn. And before you know it, when you realize who you are in the kingdom, you don't have so much the fear thing that, you know, you're not enough. Because we get these constant messages in the world that we live that you're just not enough. You don't look the right way. You don't dress right. Your mom dresses you funny. Whatever the message is, you're just not enough. It's not true. You're more than enough because you're the king's kid. I remember as a kid, in my 20s, I worked for my father. I worked for him twice. I lasted a year one time and 6 months the other. And he was a tough old Irishman, and he would not hold back in firing you. Well, I got fired. And it was an interesting time. But when there was kind of that good period, I remember being able to walk down to the executive suites where his office, in his giant office, it was kind of like in the movies, and I could go in, and I could walk into the king's deal. And I could go into meetings that no other 25-year-old got to go into. And I could sit and I could listen. And it was like, that's my dad. And I really loved my dad. You know, he was a tough character, but I was a handful. And so that dynamic I understand. But I loved my dad. He was the man. And what he said, his word was, that's all I had to say. I want this to be done. Guess what? His whole team went to get that thing done. There's a real empowering thing. I think maybe that's why I ended up being so cocky and saying, well, I want to do a movie. Okay, I'll write a screenplay. Okay, I'll pitch it. I would just do it, and I would learn along the way. It was kind of a good story. Rules and me didn't get along so well because, you know, I kind of thought I was the king's kid, and I could kind of make the rules. Well, in a way, that's good because it doesn't limit you. Now, I advise you, if you want to, you know, learn, if you want to do something, learn about it. Take more time and study and read up and figure all the ways. It'll save you a lot of bumps and bruises, okay? But the reality is I didn't have the fear because of that experience. Now, I got bumped around a lot after that, and I had a lot of fear, and I think in some ways I might still have a little fear in this area or that area. And then the second tip, remember that your mission in this world is to be a representative of God and the Lord. At the end of the day, the way that you show up in people's lives ultimately reflects on your God. It's not about money and fame and fortune. Trust me, it's not. And I've kind of been around a little bit of that. It's a lot of fraud. It's a lot of smoke and mirrors. It's a lot of advertising. And today, we didn't use this word back in the 80s or 90s, but it's the idea of there's a lot of branding going on. You know, and we have social media and, you know, we present ourselves. You know what I'm saying? So walk in a manner that's worthy of your calling. Worthy. And then the final tip, and I'll close with this, I think. Stand. Paul, in Ephesians 6, basically says, stand firm against the schemes of the devil, of the adversary. Because I don't think you like the one devil, but the negative energies. But there's schemes, and schemes are not necessarily simple. It's like playing chess as opposed to checkers. And there's a lot of really subtle ways that we can get set up in our lives to get hurt. And then we, you know, hurt and fear, and it's like, I didn't see it. And the idea is that we have to be very vigilant with that which we accept in the forefront of our mind. I'm a little ADD. I don't know if you noticed that or not. I'm kind of all over this place. And it's really easy to get going over here and over here and over here. And sometimes you get those messages that you're not enough, that you didn't have the right school, or you didn't, you know, you're not Charlie Atlas, or, you know, your nose is too big, or you're getting a little bald. Whatever the thing is, you're not enough. And you kind of subconsciously get caught up in that stuff. And so Paul says, stand firm against the wiles, the schemes of the adversary. Because the adversary wants you to live in fear, wants you to feel limited. And, you know, we live with a God that perfect love casts out all fear. It casts it out. And I remember... I shared this a couple of years ago. I got in trouble with my little city because of some building permit issues in this old house I have. And, you know, it's kind of part of the way I make my living. And I was like, oh, my, I was afraid to death. But it was really a good experience because I had to look that fear in the face and walk it through. Like, what if I did lose this place? What would I do? And you know what? A whole new world opened up to me. I had all kinds of plans, you know, after about 9 months of, you know, sweating it. But stand firm against the schemes of the adversary that would make you live in fear, make you think that you're not enough, that would limit you. And remember that at the end of the day, no matter what you go through, it's like the Apostle Peter, although he didn't write it, it was... his sayings, he talked about, though your faith being tested by gold was found to be pure. And the idea was that the ancient goldsmith would take gold and he would heat it up in a crucible. And I forget the degrees, I think it was maybe 1500 degrees. And the impurities in the gold would rise to the surface. And the goldsmith would take this kind of ladle, spoon, and he'd take off the top, the impurities, and he'd put it aside. And you know how you would know that you had pure gold? Is if you look down into the gold, you would see your face. And the clearer that you see your face, the more pure the gold is. And that's kind of what Jesus, that's kind of what the idea is around this. Is that as we go through temptations and trials and we get beat up and, you know, it's like you're going to stay down and you're going to get up. And every one of those things, it's like, you know, the heat goes up underneath you and it's like, ooh, this isn't easy. I don't like this. But as you get through it, you see what you're made of, and you see where your faith is. Because we live in the unseen world, not just the seen world. And so when Jesus allows you to go through this stuff, just see what the impurities are. And then it says, you know, basically confess your sins one to another, and that these impurities come. And it's like, that's when it gets ladled off. And when you look into the gold, hopefully you see the face of Jesus. And so that's what I want to say to you guys tonight is everybody's got a journey. Keep getting up. Don't fall down. Don't believe the people that say you're not enough. In fact, this friend of mine said, "That is so cool. There's a party up in heaven cheering me on. I got this whole great cloud of witnesses, and they're partying for me. They're going, yeah, get to the finish line. Get up." Because at the end of the day, all those things that are heated up under you cause you to be more like Jesus. Okay, I'm done. Thank you.